Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's a double episode. Geeks On Games of 2007, that's board games and video games, and how to build a supporting cast for your role-playing game. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Welcome, everybody.
Oh, are we recording?
Another episode of Geeks On.
Hello, my geeklings.
Don and Helga sitting in a
Shut up.
Killing people with, I don't know.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy
and
New
welcome
Year.
To our first episode of 2008.
Man, who would have thought we would survive till 2008?
Yeah, when did we start recording?
2000, well, this is our fourth year. Right?
No, this is our third year, right?
No, we're moving into our fourth.
We could find out. We can go on the website real fast, see what the earliest episode there is.
I think people probably know
No, because
know
last
more
year
we
were embarking on our third year, so this year we are embarking on our fourth.
Okay,
fourth year.
So it's been 3 years. Wow. We're moving on to our fourth year.
Yeah.
Coming up soon, our birthday.
A birthday.
They said it couldn't be done. They actually really wished it wouldn't be done, but we're still here.
Like a bad penny.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and video...
Aaron, why don't you do that again?
But it's kind of fun to hear
I was
screw
a
it up.
Video game professional.
Well, technically you are.
True. You're really good at them. Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
Hello, my name is Donald Marshall. I'm a writer and video game professional here in sunny Los Angeles, and I, too, am a geek.
Hi, my name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, my name is Pete Robinson, and I am a screenwriter and a filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
And you're wearing a snazzy Ghostbusters t-shirt.
I got Slimer.
That is badass.
I've been slimed.
He's the ugliest slimer I have ever seen.
But I love this shirt.
It looks super comfy.
It makes me happy whenever I put this on.
Yeah. There was a little link, a thread in our forums all about the great geek t-shirt, and there were some really cool geek t-shirts.
I wore my You Had Me at Halo at to work, and everybody wanted the t-shirt. Yeah.
That is a great shirt.
Yeah, it's a good shirt.
That was a gift given to us by our good friend Eris.
Yeah. Who is awesome.
Who will hopefully be on our show one day again soon.
Yes, rather than just being a voice on something.
Yeah.
No, he did Games On.
Yeah, he did.
Jocks On.
Yeah, yeah, he was one of our Jocks On. Jocks On.
Well, we have a super big episode. Yeah. Quickly, how about everybody's geek holiday?
I had a good geek holiday. I played video games. Nothing terribly new.
Mass Effect ate my life. I got a Nintendo DS for Christmas.
Oh, that's right.
My brain age is now 20.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well done, sir.
Lots of work. Cat.
So, wait, is young good?
Young is better. 20
like
is the lowest.
Like, if you're 8, that's better?
No, 20 is the lowest you can go.
Oh, nice.
So, I'm happy about that. Cat, anti-video game woman, is addicted to Brain Age.
DS crosses those lines.
Addicted.
Man.
So, it's really cool. Like, I'll catch her playing for 2.5 hours straight, and I'm like, honey, it's time to put down the video game. And she's like, stop it. You're not allowed to say that to me.
How much is a DS these days?
DS is like
It's like 120 to 180.
Something. Yeah.
It's not bad.
Not at all. I got the new Link, whatever, Zelda video game for it, too, which is just as corny as always, but rather interesting.
I got an iPhone.
I told you. Okay, now we know. I set up that poll on the forums that said, when will Aaron get an iPhone?
I was going to hold off, and I told my wife, don't buy me one. So, just before Christmas, my iPod just flat out dies. Now, I've been keeping this thing alive for years. I've replaced the batteries twice. Yeah. The thing suddenly just skips music. It's just
dying. You had the big, chunky old one.
Right. And I was like, I'm holding out until, like, the one I really want. And then I dropped my Razor.
and it busted the top half of the phone, so I could receive calls, but the screen didn't work at all.
Oh, what was with you in electronics last year?
Oh,
end of last year was ridiculous.
I've almost replaced everything in my house, it seems like. So I had nothing. I had no iPod, no phone. I had to go buy both. And Maureen, my wife, was like, don't. I'm buying you Christmas presents. So
that's like... So wait.
You should have seen how casual he was about showing it off.
Yeah, he was like, you see...
hold on, I just got to check my iPhone for a quick number.
Every time anybody has like a question or anything, I'm like, let me check my iPhone.
Excuse me, I'm just getting a call right now on my iPhone.
The funny part was, I totally didn't notice the first like four times he did it.
Right.
I was just like, okay, that's cool. So anyway...
Oh, you need a mirror? Well, maybe you could see your reflection in my iPhone.
My new iPhone. It is fun. It is a definitely fun gadget. I have to say, I am using it way more than I thought I was.
And I just got this brand new geek gadget as well called the Jawbone. It's a new Bluetooth headset.
It is pretty dramatic.
It's really, really cool, and it's a noise cancellation headset. So you can put on the noise cancellation software on it, mm-hmm. power it up, and it works the same way those Bose headphones work. So it samples the ambient noise, and it gets rid of all of it. So I can actually stand out on the street in the middle of traffic, and you won't hear a damn thing.
Yeah, when you turned it on, it was pretty dramatic.
Let's also point out that it's got this part of it that feels the vibrations in your jaw as you speak.
It's a mandible thing. Which is why it's called the Jawbone.
It knows when you're speaking, and it can feel the vibrations so that it knows what to pay attention to and what not to, which is pretty phenomenal.
And it reads your thoughts. So that
does helps. Your laundry whole thing.
Do you actually have to jack into it?
Well, it's got these needles that when you put it on,
I don't judge.
Little wire goes down your ear and
yes, down your throat. any other good presents, gadgets?
I got a crock pot.
Nice.
That was my big present this year.
Yeah?
I got a crock pot.
Oh, done.
Well, and I was happy for it.
I love crock pot cooking. So
you have to teach me.
You can make a massive cocoa van in a crock pot. We should do Geeks on Cooking. I don't know how geeky it is.
They keep telling us to do that, and it's like Doritos.
Actually, there
is Cheetos during a board game session.
There is one guy who brings geekiness to cooking, and he's a scientist. And
Alton Brown?
I'll have to look him up on the internet, but literally, like, everything he does is scientific. Like when he cooks a turkey,
it's called a baker.
No. There's a guy on Food Network. His name is Alton Brown. He's a scientist.
When he cooks a turkey, he's found out that like what he does is he actually takes cold packs and attaches it to certain parts of the meat because that meat takes longer to cook. Or less long to cook, so that when he cooks the meat, it'll all be ready at the same time. I mean, he's like he literally
too much time. Yeah.
I saw an episode of Iron Chef where they were making dessert by using liquid nitrogen.
I thought
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, this guy is like that. He does stuff. It's like he's cooking in a lab.
We got to find Alton Brown.
All right. Speaking of long episode and not rambling on.
What's 30 seconds in?
Come on now.
Let's move to news.
Let's do some news.
Cue the music.
Don got to say it this week.
I love the music. I'm grooving out.
All right, who's starting it?
Getting
I'll do
down.
It. Hit it, Peter.
So, British newcomer Gemma Arterton has been cast as the new Bond girl. Mm-hmm. In the upcoming Bond 22.
Is she fine?
Well, you know, odd that you would ask that because I brought pictures of her.
The answer is no.
They also have the villain.
They decided to go in a new direction. They decided to avoid hotness.
Really?
It's interesting. She's cute, but she's not what
you
would expect.
But the last one was cute.
Yeah. It was not what I expected.
The first Bond girl's always like, va-voom. And the second one's always...
I think she's pretty pretty.
She's cute.
Yeah, she's pretty. Been, she's cute, but she's but she was not.
It's hard to tell
what I thought.
I mean, this is like a publicity photo from a street.
She looks
or
like Angelina Jolie's sort of younger, not as good looking sister.
Nice.
Well, she just looks.
Well,
more
she's
going to
be on our show next week, Matt. Yeah. So you can.
I'm
going
to get
yourself.
Burned by all these. This is going to come back
is,
to haunt
yeah, totally
me
is.
At some point in time.
Anyway, the casting of Arterton.
She's very pretty.
Yes. Who has just a handful of movie roles under her belt continues the tradition of Bond producers choosing less established actresses.
She probably just
like people like Ursula Andress, Jane Seymour, and Eva Green. And, you know, Denise Richards. Maybe that one didn't fit in there.
Let's turn that away.
But anyway, yeah, so interesting. You know?
Yeah.
Excellent. Who's the villain?
I recognize the guy, but I can't remember his name. I just saw it yesterday, but I should have brought it.
Who's the villain? Is it a Blofeld kind of villain, or what are they doing?
No, he kind of got that like Irish terrorist
The name
guy.
Blofeld sounds like a Bond villain in and of itself.
No, that was a
Blofeld. I completely misheard. Never mind. I was thinking of someone else.
All right, so I have a lot of news, so I'm going to break it up. But essentially, it's all stuff pouring out of CES, which is going on right now.
I wondered whether or not you were on this.
I was going to go, but Lisa bailed on me. So,
wench.
Damn you, Lisa!
I didn't want to go alone, so I'm not there. But some of the highlights, some of the things I think are highlights. First of all, Bill Gates' last keynote as the head of Microsoft was this year.
He's going to go and give away money.
There's a hilarious video of his last day at work that they made where he's, you know, calling Bono because he's got a cool, you know, Guitar Hero 3 riff and he's wondering if he could join the band. And he's auditioning for Steven Spielberg. And it's really, really funny. He should have done it 10 years ago because it really kind of makes him funny and human. He drives to work. He puts his briefcase and his coffee on the top of his car and drives to work. But it's like there when he gets there. Anyway, it's you guys should all go check it out. Then the big thing that everybody has been buzzing about is Panasonic has their 150-inch plasma television.
Are you going to go buy this one upgrade?
I don't think I'll be buying this one.
I think you should start leasing your electronics so you can just, you know, upgrade when you're ready to.
That would be awesome. That's a great freaking idea, but that's the reason why no one does that. Because everyone would be trading in every 6 months. This is actually four plasmas seamed together. So it's actually a 4K image if you could actually stream a 4K image there.
Oh, sorry, I just saw four TVs like duct taped together.
You know, this is pretty seamless. It looks freaking amazing. Let's see.
So it's 12 feet, a little over 12 feet wide.
Yeah.
Wow. That's just wild.
Who needs that much TV?
That's twice as big, as tall as I am.
Me?
Yeah, it's awesome.
You need that much TV?
Yeah.
Everybody needs that much TV. Ion Audio shows off a prototype for an alternative Rock Band drum set, which has got cymbals.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool. This isn't going to be made unless there is public demand for it. So they're at CES showing off to see if maybe they might make it.
Right.
Was there any clear up on whether or not Rock Band and Guitar Hero worked out their differences over the guitar problem?
No. Well, that rumor is that one of the companies, I believe,
Harmony?
Harmonix. One of the... I can't remember which company. Maybe it's...
Guitar Hero Guitar. Patch
was supposed to been made.
Well, they made the patch, and then they published it on the internet, and then they had to take it down.
Well, Activision blocked it.
Right.
Because they're like, well, why would we make a patch for something that for another product?
Right, so that your guitar works with, our guitar works with your game.
So they got a lot of bad press for this, and I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Right,
we'll see.
Okay, so it hasn't been cleared up.
Sanyo has a short throw projector. That's what they're calling it, short throw projector. This thing is pretty cool. It's a projection, a video projector that can project an 80-inch screen at only 3 inches away from the wall. So you can mount the projector just up at the top, and it projects down, and it looks like a clear...
Wow.
So you don't have to have it across the room to project.
That's a good
reflector. It's freaking awesome. I'm not sure how much they cost and when they'll be available.
I should tell Kat's dad about that.
I'll do one more before moving on, then I'll come back to it. But this is huge. Paramount announced that they're going Blu-ray exclusive, and I think this... Warner Brothers announced...
I was going to say, WB did too.
Yeah, Warner Brothers announced it a couple days ago, which I think is the death toll for HD DVD, and now Paramount says, yeah, we're going to do that too. So, essentially... I think Blu-ray has now pretty much won. The rumor is next week when this is a total rumor that when Macworld is going on, that they might announce that they're going to start installing Blu-ray drives in the machines. That's a total rumor. But anyway,
that sucks. Doesn't the HD drive come with the Xbox 360?
Doesn't come with it.
Well, but you have to buy it. You can buy it, but it's a great HD.
I have it. I bought it. So I've got the beta cam, the Betamax of the HD world. Anyway, I've got some more. I'll come back to it later when we move back around to my turn again.
Okay, Donnie?
I brought no news this week.
All right, nice.
I'm news free.
He brought himself. So the UN joins forces with Marvel Comics. He's fought against foes ranging from the Green Goblin to Doc Ock, but Spider-Man now faces an even more formidable challenge, improving the battered image of the United Nations. Good luck. In a move reminiscent of storylines developed during the Second World War, the UN is joining forces with Marvel Comics, creators of Spider-Man, blah, 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 to create a comic book showing the international body working with superheroes to solve bloody conflicts and rid the world of disease.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. The comic is going to be distributed free to a million U.S. school children. It's going to be set in a war-torn fictional country and feature superheroes such as Spider-Man working with U.N. agencies such as UNICEF and the Blue Hats and the U.N. peacekeepers.
I'm sorry, did you say a million children?
A million children.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
Spider-Stan.
Well, I guess they're trying to, you know, start off and spread the word.
Okay.
Yeah, the final storyline's due to be approved in February. The cartoonists are working for free. So
cool.
Who knows?
There's a war in Magnetostan. It's a fake country where Magneto is the head of the
Magnetostan.
We must have the UN arms.
I just love
inspectors.
That this article calls them cartoonists. That just ticks me off a little bit. Anyway, yeah, the UN's goals are somewhat different. According to its website, it hopes the comics will teach children the value of international cooperation and sensitize them to the problems faced in other parts of the world. Yeah. So they're doing this actually in specific response to John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the UN, who said, if the UN building in New York lost 10 stories, it wouldn't make a bit of difference.
He said that about a year before we appointed him as our diplomat to the UN.
Yeah. So, there's news.
All right, Don, your turn.
I still don't have any news.
Okay.
Oh, too bad. All right. An 8-million-year-old bacterium that was extracted from the oldest known ice on Earth is now growing in a laboratory, claims researchers.
Oh, this is a good idea.
This always ends well.
If confirmed...
I've seen this movie.
This means ancient bacteria and viruses will come back to life as ice melts due to global warming.
Maybe they already have.
But there is nothing to worry about, say experts, because the process has been going on for billions of years. And the bugs are... unlikely to cause human disease.
8 million years
ago. Yeah, but what about these freaking meteorites from outer space that got buried? They've got alien fucking diseases down there in the snow. The snow melts, and now we've got alien spores.
All right, so the lead character, his name is John Forrester. And, sorry, I thought you were pitching.
No.
Oh.
Did they not see the thing? What is wrong with... No.
So the thing, the blob, outbreak.
It sounds like a pretty. I wouldn't be surprised if this was a movie in about 2.5 years.
In a world gone mad.
So anyway, here's the deal. They've tried to they've been pulling bacteria out of ice, seeing if they can make it grow.
Cold death.
The stuff they've been pulling out of the new ice actually grows pretty quickly. The stuff that grows out of the old ice doesn't grow as well. They think the stuff that pull out the old ice doesn't grow as well because it's been damaged. The DNA has been damaged by basically, you know, solar rays, radiation,
frostbite.
And all sorts of shit. So basically,
Jurassic spore.
This is it.
Keep going, Peter.
This is the end of the world. This is where it's coming from. All right, I'm done.
Oh, you are done. Yeah, that's there's something not good about this.
Yeah, no, it
there's just something not
it's
good.
A very cheery
see the zombie movie.
It's a very cheery article, but now
I'm a little nervous.
But at the end, they just say, "But there's nothing to worry about."
Yeah, they just go, "Oh my
god, that sign."
We
don't
worry think it'll eat your children.
Maybe they'll find out that it eats plastic.
Well, back to CES, Consumer Electronics Show.
Hang on a second. Don, don't you want to do news?
I don't have a news story this time around.
Oh.
Meanwhile, back at CES.
Ah.
All right. Here's something I thought was interesting to us podcasters. Belkin is making a self-contained mini podcast studio. A little device you can hook.
You just said a Belkin.
Oh, Belkin's.
Oh, Belkin.
Yeah, Belkin
not
is
like,
a company.
Not like a Vulcan.
No.
No.
Looks oddly like an iPod.
Well, no, that's an iPod hooked into the top.
I know.
Yeah, this is really good for the watchers of our podcast.
I never realized the Belkin actually sounds like a really great Star Trek race.
Yeah,
Belkin sounds like, you know, an elven sub-race.
Well, anyway, you can plug your iPod to it. It's like a kind of mini studio. It has several inputs and apparently has pretty high-quality audio, so you can go on the road doing podcasts. You don't be stuck in front of a computer.
We can roll anywhere in the world.
Straight to your iPod.
Let's record it.
8 million years ago, under the ice.
Now that I've got an iPhone... I've been kind of looking at some of the iPhone stuff coming out. Next week, of course, is Macworld. We'll see if there's any new improvements there. But there's a company, I think they're called
Peter's like
company called Flytunes. I'm not sure if it's actually called Flytunes, but there's a product called Flytunes. They've got this internet radio for the iPhone. It's a website that you can get to on your iPhone that will be streaming internet radio. So all those things that you see on the Macintosh and all that, internet radio, you should be able to get onto your iPhone, which is pretty cool.
I have Pandora on my iPhone, though.
Do they have that on? I don't know.
Have,
but that would be that would be awesome.
That would be the way to go.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Mm-hmm. The other two big things that I've seen that look really interesting to me is the flash cards are getting really big. They're like, you know, gigs and gigs now. There's like a 16, a 27, and like a 64 card.
I have to interrupt for just 1 second. I'm so fucking old school. Pardon. I'm so very old school. When you said flash cards, the first thing that came to mind was, what is this symbol?
It's three wavy lines.
Yeah, I'm like, 3 gigs? That's an enormous freaking flash card.
No. We're talking about the new ones, Don. The new... It's like a room of cavemen.
Okay, Luddite.
I'm going to go home and get my 5 1/4-inch floppy and show you my 3 gigs.
Right in the middle of something, Ray.
The other cool thing is these HD camcorders that are popping out, like Canon and stuff. There's these camcorders that are like the size of a Coke can that are recording... There are 3-chip cameras that are 1080p images.
Wow.
At 24 and 30 now.
Am I thinking I bought my camera too soon?
Well, how expensive you can never... Well, some of them are like $400.
You could take a picture of Peter that would look more like Peter than Peter.
I know. It's that crystal clear.
Wow.
Yes.
No, but there's... Canon's got these... I mean, all these companies are coming out with them. In fact, let's see. Casio's coming out with a SLR camera, still camera, that shoots video.
Is that sign language for SLR?
Yeah. So SLR that shoots video, but shoots it at like 300 frames a second, and in smaller resolutions, gives up to 1,000 frames a second. So you can like...
Jeez.
Pop a balloon with water in it and watch the balloon kind of explode in slow motion. It's pretty cool.
I'm not sure what
and that's
use
under
that
a,
for, but
it's
I'm
under $1,000. Well, if you want to do slow motion stuff, you mean not doing that slow, but at, you know, 150 frames a second, you could do nice slow mo stuff, which is you can't really do in video right now. So anyway, there's some pretty cool high definition.
I can finally shoot my fight movie.
Your whole movie's in slow mo.
It's the fight movie you want to film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's...
Hang on, I got to call my wife.
That's the stuff that I've seen so far from CES. There's another couple days. It's all coming out on the internet. You can go to Engadget, Gizmodo, Dig.com, all that stuff, and get
all
of it.
Did you see Bill Gates' whole prediction speech, too, about how the next 5 years are going to advent new interaction with computers using all of our senses?
So, yeah. He keeps
saying that. I don't want to smell my computer.
It's because he's pushing that interactivity.
He's pushing the Surface. iBook pad Surface thing, whatever it is.
You know what? If I have to smell a computer to interact with it, I will never use anyone's computer but my own ever again.
I read this awesome article on about how to hack your body's senses. And one of the things that they talked about was, for example, these people were given...
Is this on that hack website that you love?
I don't know if I got it from there or not, but I love that site. It's my, anyway. But let me go back to the story I am talking about before I get hooked. Okay. So basically, one of the things that they did was they gave people these belts that they wore around them, and whenever they would walk around, it would always vibrate on the side of the belt that faced true north. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what this guy started to find out was that, like, literally, it got to be the point where he just was so used to it that he always knew where his house was exactly. His sense of direction was so pristine that no matter where he was, he could point directly at his house and tell you exactly where it was.
I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's my sense cool. of direction eats.
Could he do it in the middle of a mall? Because that's where I get turned around.
He could do it anywhere.
Really?
His sense of direction, because it was always vibrating north. So whenever he would walk somewhere, his...
But I assume you're taking that off. He has to wear it?
He would keep it on.
Oh,
but
that's cheating. I could do it, too, if I had a compass.
But my point is, it wasn't just the fact that it was a compass thing. It was that his internal map was so calibrated at all times that he knew exactly where it was in the way that, like, you know, birds would be able to fly.
Okay, so in other words, he probably kept track of the history of that feeling, and then he could say, I'm 32 miles north and six miles east.
And he could point. I mean, because here's the thing.
Okay.
Depending on where you are, how far away from your house, you know, you pointing to your house would be a different spot. You know,
you couldn't just say
it's that direction. He would point right at it. Now, another thing that they did was, for example, they found that they could take pins on people's backs and little tiny, you know, basically they could put something in the shape of an elephant. And people would know that it was the shape of an elephant. They'd say, that's a picture of an elephant on my back. And another example...
And I'm still bleeding.
Well, yes, exactly.
I'm not really sure what the benefit of this is.
But the point is that what they were getting visual sensation through their skin was the weird thing.
Because it's hard to do that. It's hard to even... Like, I know that they can... Like, if you even, like... pinprick out like a letter, most people can't tell you what letter it is.
Okay, anyone who wants to put pins in the pattern of an elephant on my back, we're going to have words.
Right. And the last thing that they did was some people have these problems with, you know, where they can't stand up straight. They lose their sense of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they would put something that they had in their mouth that would give them a different it's hard to describe, but by the different voltage that you would feel, low voltage, would allow them to walk without falling over.
They're torturing
because
people.
They could feel they had a different thing that would tell them what.
New products from Mengele Corp.
Right. It's hard to describe.
You start listening to the left, and it's like.
But they're using that same technology that sending current through your. They hooked that up to a video game of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And by changing the direction of the current, it felt like you were moving back and forth because your balance was being shifted.
Yeah.
And so they're using virtual reality. You're visually watching a roller coaster, and they would feel like they were going up a hill just by running current.
It's the Matrix.
Yeah, pretty cool. All right.
That's weird.
We should move on.
I'm just waiting. Weird
trivia thing. Just what you do you all know how they make you feel like you're moving so fast in Space Mountain? Is this a secret?
Wind, right? Air?
Fans.
Yeah.
They have tons of fans set up along the entire tracks, and since you're in the dark, you can't see them.
Yeah.
So the extra wind just makes you think you're shooting down those tracks.
Interesting. All right. That's fine. All right, last one. Dungeons & Dragons 4.0 meets Web 2.0, real 3D miniatures, and VOIP. So it's going
to
be...
Do you listen to our show?
You know Don did that that story.
Yeah,
when was Aaron did that?
I did that story like...
When?
A couple...
Two or three episodes ago?
Maybe
was
four
I here?
Episodes?
Yeah. You sure?
Yeah.
Well,
it was a long...
You said that was the only reason why you'd
obviously
want to play D&D ever again.
You know, we should go back and find that and replay it.
I may have to do that.
Don't understand is there's a time travel continuum. This is actually Matt from the past.
What's sad is I actually edit the show.
Yes.
And what a good job you do.
Yeah, that's so
Dungeons
sad.
Dungeons and Dragons. That was announced about 9 months ago.
I'm a late adopter.
All right, let's move on
our topic. I'm watching Lost right now.
Season one.
Season two. Oh, I'm not that bad.
All right, so our first topic...
8 million years ago, under the ice...
They made video games.
Jurassic Spore?
Jurassic Spore.
All right, so our first topic. What is our first topic, Don?
We're talking the best video games of 2007.
No.
I know the best games
of 2007.
I thought we were doing board games.
I thought we were doing
Mr. Cardboard-centric, fine.
Well, you said, let's do games and role-playing, so
well,
why would
everybody
we
else understood what I meant.
Yeah,
yeah,
I did.
We knew what you meant.
Why would we go from video games to role-playing games?
I feel that video
games was mentioned,
no.
I'm pretty sure.
I feel that this worked out for the best.
It wasn't Aaron's.
We should be more inclusive, so I think that's a good thing.
We'll just give it to Aaron at that point in time, and he can have his little day and do his thing.
All right, so we're going to do games of 2007.
Should we start with video games then?
What video games rocked your world in 2007?
Okay, I think we should do a disclosure here of like what games systems we have, because obviously no PlayStation 3 games are going to be mentioned.
Yeah, I got everything but a PlayStation 3. And I just got Drake's Fortune in the mail because I did a voice on that game. So
I hear it's a great game too.
It's supposedly the best game on the PS3.
Yeah, I've heard. Okay, so we don't have a PS3. No one here has a PS3. No. So those PS3 owners are probably going to have to go.
But the rest of us have Xbox 360s.
Yes.
And a lot of the games we'll talk about are actually on 360, or
and
both.
Everybody here has a Wii, except for me.
I have a Wii, yeah. I also have a Nintendo
DS. But
PS
I
now,
play probably. Tremendous amounts of Wii games at work.
So. Okay.
Okay, so let's mention some of the top ones here.
Halo 3.
Bioshock.
Okay. Top of the pyramid.
Bioshock.
Mass Effect,
fantastic.
I think Orange Box should be mentioned.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I really liked Portal. The rest of it could go. I like the animation style, but it's a first-person shooter.
Yeah, but it's a great, like, it's a compelling story. Like, Call of Duty 4.
Call of Duty 4 is fantastic.
Like, I play the single-player Call of Duty 4. I put it down and I put in Orange Box.
Really?
Just nothing has pushed me through the game. Now, multiplayer is fun as hell, but I haven't gotten very far through Call of Duty, so
you don't finish video games though.
I do. I do now.
Sure.
I finish almost all the Clancy games now. Halo 3, moving toward Xbox. I mean, Orange Box. What other games?
Assassin's Creed should probably be mentioned, but I was disappointed.
Virtua Fighter 5 came out.
Yes, it did.
Forget about the lists. You know, when we talk about the best video games of 2007.
Way back in time.
I believe in doing a retrospective.
Dungeons & Dragons 3.0 is going to be released.
All right, y'all suck.
What games jumps to your mind? Now, I have to point out, when we started the discussion, Matt put out Halo 3, and there was a long pause, and then everybody else looked at him with such a scathing, disparaging look and said, Bioshock.
No, I'm gonna say I almost will pick Halo 3 as my top game, and here's the reason why.
You're retarded. No.
Here's the reason why.
Your ability to
just straight out
differently able.
Straight out. As far as just having fun. Now, I'm not talking about storyline. I'm not talking about graphics. I'm not talking about any of that. I played with four of my friends through the campaign. It was a freaking blast. And then everybody has it online. So I've been playing since. I still play it almost every night. We're still playing it. The maps are pretty damn good.
And the ability to mod the map?
The ability to create new games has changed that game. Rocket Race.
Unbelievably fun.
These are games.
What is Rocket Race? Tell us.
Rocket Race is a game variant that they made where everyone divides up into teams of two. There are the ATVs spread all over the map. Everyone jumps on an ATV and
with
their buddy,
partner.
With their partner on the back with a rocket launcher. Then there you have to go around, and these little flags pop up. The first person that hit the flag gets a point, and then the flag appears somewhere else. But you have to get to it on your ATV.
Yes.
Meanwhile, your buddy's firing missile launchers at all the other ATVs. So
they're firing at you.
And they're firing at you, and it's literally just like a...
It's cacophony.
Bumper cars with missile rockets.
Yeah, and you're flying through the air.
Sounds like
it's
fun.
It's hilariously fun.
That game variant didn't exist until a month or two after the game
came
out.
What was the one we just played before we had all those weirdos come in on the game and I had to leave?
Someone made one called Shark, where it just takes place out in the water, and there's a zombie variant where he runs around in the water and everyone else is on little platforms trying to keep away, and the shark has to try to knock them off, and you know, then they become sharks if they get killed, and it, you know, expands. It's these games.
There was one that was somebody made a sort of 1942
Storm the Normandy,
and it's amazing the way they walled off one part of the board and created. You feel like
you know,
bombs are dropping.
Bombs are dropping.
Now, I have to put out there, though, with Halo 3, this is the first game in about 3 years that triggered my motion sickness when I played it. And I get violently ill.
Orange Box is actually making me a little sick. Halo Half-Life 2 is making me a little nauseous. Still fun, but
Half-Life 2 I didn't have a problem with, and I've watched people play Portal. And I don't have as much problem with Portal as
Portal
I do
doesn't. It's Half-Life 2 happens when you're on the jet boat, the boat where you're going over the water, and the and you can look one direction.
You get nauseous on virtual water too.
Well, yeah, I get seasickness. Well, the problem is that you can look any direction you want to and travel any direction. So you might be looking this way and traveling this way, and if you're off a little bit, it's like It's a little off-putting, and it kind of made me nauseous one night.
I find it very interesting because it's been about 3 years since I played a game where that triggered for me so badly.
Yes, but you're not a big first-person shooter.
Yeah, you don't like first-person.
But I have to play them. I mean, I'm familiar with them, even though I don't like them.
Okay,
you know, and
I just turn down the head turn speed.
So
probably make
maybe.
A whole.
So Halo 3
I gave my
is
game
up there.
To Peter. So
is that your vote?
For me, basically, I like Halo. It's not my number one, but it is my number two purely because it has replay value, and that is the one thing that distinctly is lacking in the video game market right now, is that basically you play it till you finish the game, you love it, and it's done. And what's new?
Well, so, Call of Duty 4 is up there with Halo 3. It's just a different type of gameplay. There's not as many mods. It could come. I mean, the people can't mod them, but the other people, the game developers could if they want to.
Right.
And so that could be that. I think it's got problems to make it a little less fun than Halo 3, so I'm not putting it on my list.
Right.
What about BioShock?
Fantastic game.
That was BioShock was a great game, I thought.
For me, it's the best FPS I've played ever.
Story-wise and keeping me engaged, I thought it was pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah. I felt like it had the best, like, not the best story. I'm not going to say that. But it had the most immersive story had in FPS ever.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Everyone keeps talking about how they didn't feel like it was on rails and you could make decisions. There is one decision to make in that game.
Yeah.
And
it's
that is it.
A rails
whoever keeps saying that is wrong.
It is
There's
totally a rails
one game. Decision that you can make, and you can make that decision 5 minutes before the game ends to change the ending.
And you can mod yourself,
but that's just upgrading.
Cares?
That's not changing the story.
Exactly.
So I hate it when people say that. It's a great game, but it is totally on rails.
And the look of it, I thought, was actually kind of daring. You know, they really went off on a limb.
It's awesome.
To go with that beautiful Art Deco style.
It's awesome.
You know, and I admire the decisions they made.
Totally.
And the
awesome.
Music. You know, how easy would it have been to go with, like, you know, a kind of a hardcore
Doom
metal style
Doom 3
music for it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that.
It got pitched to Activision, I believe, and somewhere else. I was just talking to somebody about this, and they said it got pitched to two major studios, and it got passed on twice, as did Assassin's Creed.
I could understand why. I would actually bet that game would not necessarily look that good on paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Maybe.
My guess. It's limited. It's got. I mean, honestly, there are drawbacks to the game. It's got limited enemies. There's not a tremendous variety in the creatures you encounter.
Yeah, but they could have jacked that up.
Well, the powers look cool, but on paper they don't look that different. I mean, honestly, I went through using two powers. The rest are just kind of gravy. I looked at every once in a while to take a look at it.
I went through.
I used the lightning one a lot.
Yeah,
and fire. You know.
Oh, so you just torch people.
Oh, the Big Daddy one where it gets on where you trick the Big Daddy to work for you.
I was going the evil route.
I never used that one.
Oh, Big Daddy versus Big Daddy. That's how you take
him down. I was going
the
evil route, so that was never an option for me.
I used TK a lot. I would pick up barrels and throw them at the Big Daddies. And
that's what I discovered. It's I used proximity
just
bombs
shoot
on them
with an explosive shotgun.
Okay, here's an evil trick that I figured out. You know the gas tanks that you can hurl at them to blow up. You can plant like six proximity bombs on that gas tank and then chuck it at them and kill them in one shot.
Did you discover? You looked at it online to find that out, though, right?
No, I figured it out on my own. Yeah.
All right, well, another game, Mass Effect.
That has eaten my life.
It's a great game.
I adore Mass Effect.
I'm feeling middling on it right now.
Wow.
And here's why. I just left the space station for the first time. Okay?
Really? You're playing slow.
Wow.
Well, I'm playing like that and a couple other games. And honestly, when I get home from making video games, right. I don't feel like playing video games all the time.
Mm. Who are you? I don't know you anymore. Quit your job.
I enjoy the interaction part of the game. I love the conversation part. I like the story that I've seen so far. But honestly, the combat system,
it doesn't
feel that great to me.
I agree. It's not great.
Really?
And the people are dumb. The enemies and your people are probably the dumbest I've seen in
I was really
years.
Impressed at the stupidity of the enemy AI.
Yeah, they're... It's bad.
Wow, maybe I just have the difficulty set high. I mean, I have it...
No, but if people get stuck... Like, my guys are getting stuck.
I had to restart because my guys got stuck and
you
I couldn't get them to leave.
Just tell them to follow you and
they
stop doing that.
No, they will get
I
stuck.
I have not gotten stuck once.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't gotten stuck. They've gotten
stuck. No, that's what I'm saying. I've never had any guy get stuck on
My brother wasn't very impressed with it. You'll have to tell me if this is, you know, he said that it was a lot of cutscenes. He wasn't really getting much gameplay out of it.
There's no cutscenes.
In the beginning, there's a lot of conversational stuff.
Yeah.
So he just hasn't gotten
But it's not cutscenes. It's role-playing
You'd
part.
Love Peter. Okay. You and I, you'd love the game.
It's talk. I mean, you can spend 3 hours and not get into combat at all, and that bothers people. I bought the game off of somebody because they had it for one day and went, I can't. I'm just talking to people.
That's what my brother said.
I actually loved that part of the space station. Like, I went up like 6 levels.
It's not
just
Halo.
Talking with people. I was very happy with that.
I mean, it's not Halo.
But when I got to combat, it was dull. The combat was repetitive. It was, where's the little dot? Okay, shoot the little dot.
Here's the other problem is that the force powers, or the Mass Effect powers, are lame.
That's my problem. I picked an adept.
I'm having fun with them.
I picked an adept, and I'm so unimpressed with my powers.
Yeah, it sucks. If
you pick that, you're fucked. You gotta go and get a combat.
I love the adept. You can use the singularity powers.
Yeah,
and like that.
There's warp. There's throw and something else. And I don't
singularity.
Even see
there's lift. I haven't
gotten lift yet.
Lift is great. Well, then you don't have singularity.
I've seen
three. You have singularity.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. That came. All right. So then, Don, what else would you put on this?
What about the
Wii game you played? You seem to have liked that.
It's fun.
Metroid?
Yeah, Metroid was great fun, but it's
not even on the list.
Not on the list, no. It's a fantastic game, but I'd say,
honestly, the game, it's not the game I play most, but it's the one I've been most impressed by, has been Rock Band.
I forgot to put that on my list.
We have had a lot of fun. Yeah, the group play there, it goes beyond a video game.
But again, we have a big group of friends who love playing Rock Band, which is rare, I think. You know, and
well, this is our pick.
No, I'm sure that there's...
I mean, yeah, I mean, it definitely...
Well,
but
hold
it's
on.
Losing
regardless
like
whether or not...
Three.
Well, yeah,
regardless whether or not...
Three is a franchise that's been
but
established.
But it's also because you have to buy, you know, who wants to just...
None of that matters.
Buy, get
the Wii game, the thing that we keep condemning the Wii on, right, is that it looks like it's got the best setup for party games, and it's failed to deliver so far.
Right. It's got one
Rock Band has successfully delivered a party game.
Yeah.
That is better than any other party game we've seen on any console
today.
We
used to bring in Kung Fu Chaos 2.
Oh, I loved... There's Kung Fu Chaos 2.
No, there isn't. Wait until you see the new...
I loved Kung Fu Chaos.
There's a new Wii game that I played a demo of. What is it? It's UFC. And you actually punch using the control.
I don't believe that.
I was loving it.
Okay.
What about Zelda?
Zelda was great.
I didn't play it.
Zelda was a phenomenal game.
Will you put it on the list that we've been talking about?
Yes, absolutely. I haven't played Mass Effect. Okay, so my top three games, Zelda would be my third.
Oh, you're going to love Mass Effect, people.
All right, so what's your top then? Let's call it out.
Top of the bunch, for me, I have to go with Bioshock.
Bioshock's your number one.
Best look of the game, most immersive in story. I felt like I actually, you know, got hornswoggled in the game when the character got hornswoggled. I dug it on most levels. I didn't admire all of the design, like the gameplay design elements.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as just feeling like I'm in a different world with real depth to it, top winner for me.
And okay. I'm in strong agreement with that. Heads and Tails, my first pick.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say Mass Effect, really, because it's just, I mean, yeah, it's really eaten my life. No game has made me just want, I can't stop playing as much as Mass Effect this year.
I really wish I could pick Bioshock, because it's probably the most beautiful game I've played. I really was into my character and building all that stuff. And I really, really loved it. But to be honest, after it was done, it was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still enjoying Halo 3.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it doesn't have the best graphics. It has a terrible story.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with all that stuff, but just flat out, I'm having more fun with Halo 3. So for this year, I would pick Halo 3.
Yeah.
Although, when you brought up Rock Band, which I kind of forgot to bring up, Rock Band is a freaking awesome game.
I just love
the drummer face. But I'm not sure if I would enjoy it.
Have you seen the drummer face that Aaron gets when he's like,
God.
It's hilarious. He looks like Neil Peart.
I'm not sure if I would enjoy, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I'm not sure I would enjoy it as much playing by myself.
No.
You know,
it's fun to go through the songs, just like it does in Guitar Hero. You go through the songs, and yes, it's fine. But it blows Guitar Hero out of the water when it comes to inviting your friends over. I mean, we played.
Yeah,
we had a party the other night.
Friends over.
When we had a party the other night, I thought we would take the game out and play for an hour and a half. We played for 5 hours.
Yeah,
with like 20 people.
Have you figured out what you do with the top controls on that guitar? On the Rock Band?
Yeah.
Can you play?
You can. Here's the thing. When it there's a part where the section gets blue.
Yeah.
You switch down there and you don't have to strum. You just go. You can just.
Oh, you can finger tap.
You finger tap. Yeah. And you can do that. And if you do that, it's a little easier and you can do it faster because you don't have to strum.
That's funny.
Yes.
Okay.
I had to go through the tutorial to figure that out. Anyway, so. So we all picked
my number two is Halo. My number three is Zelda. And. I would mention there's a weird game that I kind of am into. It's called Avernum. I've talked about it before.
Yeah.
It's the Macintosh game. It's
Spiderweb
software, and it's really old school. But I really love it. I mean, it's the reason that people like this game is because it's massive.
Catan would be on your list.
Yeah, it's like Catan. You play
that
like
all
crazy.
The time.
Oh yeah, Catan definitely should be on my list. Right? that is a great game, but that's more. It's just a board game. I mean, it's
I'm actually going to put out one more game as a separate category that I think Peter will agree with me on. Casual game of the year, which would have to be Puzzle Quest.
Oh, Puzzle Quest was fun, too. Yeah,
My wife went through the entire game, and she didn't play video games.
I did, too. I actually got a character up to level like 50 and beat the end guy. You know?
Oh, she hasn't beat the end guy. You have to teach her how.
Whooped his ass.
I'm shocked that we don't have any expansions for that yet. I haven't seen anything.
It's still a relatively new game.
Oh, yeah?
And actually, they've been busy
releasing it on
every platform.
Oh, yeah.
Every single platform you can think of. Cell phones, PSP, DS, everything.
Smart.
Speaking of expansions... were there any expansions or new games on the PC that were any good? This has been the first year where I have not played one PC game.
Civilization Beyond the Sword was an excellent
Crisis
expansion.
Came out, which was like...
I didn't play that.
It just came out. It's like, it eats machines
for... supposed to eat your machine, right.
It looks freaking awesome. I mean, it's crazy looking, but yeah, it will... I hear it tears up.
I don't know.
PCs.
I got a pretty tricked out computer.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Civilization Beyond the Sword was a really good one.
Is that?
It's an expansion pack for Civilization.
And by expansion pack, what does it do?
It adds new technologies, new world wonders, and new civilizations.
That's fun.
And new ways to play that were outside of war. Right.
Yeah.
The one they did before that was a war expansion.
That would make
expansion.
Don happy.
Yeah.
Well, in combination with the war expansion, it was a good double whammy. But this was also sort of the year of the casual game. Casual games are exploding right now. So next year, we may actually see a little bit more of those.
Blah, blah. This casual game thing, come on, give me a break.
Oh, you know what?
Oh, just be a gamer is what you're saying.
Okay, I heard this on another podcast, and I've been trying to... I've been saying the same thing, but he really kind of summed it up better.
Betrayal.
About the Wii.
Yeah.
The Wii is like the Teddy Ruxpin right now. It is not... it's the thing to buy because...
Can you and I be friends?
Because people go over to people's houses and they play tennis and they go, that's fun. We had so much fun. Let's get that tennis game thing. They're not buying it as a game system, I don't think.
Hmm.
There's no people are. It's flying off the shelves, and we all hear that. There's
you know,
no
the
game
Wii
for
is not the only casual game platform.
What's that?
The DS is doing extremely well,
and
those are casual games.
Has been for a year.
The PC market has shifted almost entirely to casual games.
Yeah.
Every major game company right now this year has opened a casual games division.
Is that because of World of Warcraft? Do you think? For a certain extent?
No, it's a different group. People who play World of Warcraft in general are gamers.
That's what I'm saying.
My wife plays
casual gamers.
That's what I'm saying. World of Warcraft ate a lot of the gamers.
Oh, it kills
and so
the
people
PC
who
market.
And people who are sort of just want to log on and play a couple levels, are they now all going, I don't want to play World of Warcraft and there's nothing else out on the
shelf. I think it's people sitting on their couches watching TV with their laptop open or sitting at work doing shit.
I don't think they think like that. I think what happens is, World of Warcraft's out there, and then that's its own separate thing. And then someone makes a casual game like Catan, and suddenly a lot of people are playing it, or, Puzzle Quest is suddenly successful, and they're like... And keep in mind, a lot of these games are games that would not have been bought in the past. These are not games that people would have been likely to have bought in a store when you go shopping.
Right.
But because you can download these games and you're at home and you go, I'm kind of bored. Let me go see what I can find to play because I'm bored right now. Someone downloads a game that they're not as likely to have bought. It's not as expensive as it would be in the store. And they play it and they go, that's really fun. And then their friends come over and see them playing going, wow, that's great. And it expands that way. I think it's much more organic. Mm.
Though that's the gamer's experience of casual games. Mm-hmm. The thing is with casual games, the reason why they're so big is because non-gamers are picking them up, meaning senior citizens, meaning women. These are people who do not see their friends playing them. Honestly, I don't know how most casual gamers fall into the market. I have no idea.
I'll tell you exactly.
Internet pop cap game crap.
Yeah.
Come on. With the Wii, what happens is someone's got a Wii at their house, and the family comes over, and it's Thanksgiving, and Grandma's there, and, hey, Grandma, play tennis with me. Grandma comes over. She plays tennis.
I don't want it.
Then she does it. She has a great time. She cackles. She
great.
Laughs.
And I didn't even have to get
You heard about
the
Queen
chair.
Of England getting addicted to the Wii.
No, I didn't, but there you go.
All right. And then the next thing you know,
they bring it back to their...
But the Wii is not the Wii is not the market. I'm just telling you.
No. But
casual game market is very like Mystery Case Files is not discovered by families playing it together. But Mystery Case Files is the biggest selling casual game across.
Out of curiosity, what is that?
Mystery Case Files is the casual game of the year for most actual casual game portals.
Mm-hmm.
What it is it's basically a hidden game. A hidden puzzle game where you see like a photo of a room, you have a list of things you have to find, and you have to find them hidden in the room.
Hmm.
Like highlights. Hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
But they build sort of a story around it. They build little mini games into there. Things like, if you click on this, the bookshelf moves, you find the safe behind it, and then you have to find the item in the safe. It's the most intricate you can imagine getting with
it's
that.
It's interesting because there is a whole... series of Flash games that have been extremely popular. They call them inner room games or something like that.
Why don't we do a show on casual games?
We
instead of making a show out of casual games now.
Keep Aaron from going absolutely batshit crazy.
The vein is throbbing in his head.
Yeah, I see it. It's close to exploding. Don't you see it?
Keeping us on track.
Aaron Hendricks.
Board games of 2007.
Board and card.
All right. Board and card games. I have a list of some here that we have played.
All right. Okay.
And one game I have and wish I had played.
Okay. Is Talisman Speaking Board Games on video games yet?
It's not out on Xbox Live yet, no. Talisman 4 did come out, though. Mm-hmm. Fourth edition. Have not played it. Medici versus Strozzi. This is a two-player game that I got. I think it's a great game.
Lots of fun.
Short game.
I was impressed
in 20
by it.
Minutes. Very fun. Pillars of the Earth, which is another kind of keyless. That's one you guys haven't played that. I played it when I bought it. It's kind of like keyless ish, but a little bit lighter and faster. If Wishes Were Fishes, I'm not sure how many people.
I have not played that yet.
Yep, it's a
That's a lot. That's a very accessible game to just about anybody. It's a great game.
Great game. 2 to 5 players. That's another Rio Grande game. The one that I have that has been winning lots of these little geeky awards is Age of Empires 3, Age of Discovery.
Ooh.
It's another one of these worker placement games, which is very That this is the year of worker placement. Kalis was like one of the first
resource
ones.
Management games.
Worker placement, where you put the worker on the board and then you go through the board and play out the game. That's different than Puerto Rico,
just,
which is
it's
like
it's not just resource management because you're. It's also strategy in terms of order placement.
Yeah, it's like order of placement games.
From, you know, okay. Yeah.
Kalis Magna Carta. That's one that you I played with you. It's the Kalis card game version.
That's great.
And those are the big ones that I thought were... I thought Battle War was this year, but that was last year. There's so many expansion packs that...
Arkham Horror Dunwich Horror came out. Dunwich came out this year, I think.
There's a lot, you know, a lot of Battle War expansions came out and all that stuff, but that most of those games came out before. I thought... To be honest, I really like If Wishes Were Fishes, and I don't know. I played Medici versus Strozzi so much because it's so quick. It's a two-player game and so quick, and it's a really great game. But I really love Kalis, the board game, and I thought Kalis Magna Carta was almost the exact same game.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very close.
There's a little bit of a frustrating mechanic where I just didn't feel like I had enough cards to do what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like I couldn't
House
do
rules.
A full turn. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe I was just not playing well. But
that's possible.
I might put that on my top of my list. And the reason why I'm not putting Pillars of the Earth, which was a really fun game, is I was learning at the time and I didn't play the full... I think we were rushed through it.
Well, the Kalis game, I got my brother and his fiancé to play that, and they loved it.
Yeah.
They really, you know... but the inevitable question that we always get when we talk about board games is someone emails us and goes, you know, I really love board games. I'd like to play. My fiancé, my girlfriend, my you know, boyfriend, my whatever, my family, they're not geeks.
I wouldn't play that game.
What would be an entry game to bring into it? And the one out of this that I would say is If Wishes Were Fishes. I think that one is like...
Well, Medici versus Strozzi
is a great game, but it's still not...
And it's
a paragraph. There's a one. It's a one paragraph rule book.
And I'm not saying that it's not about the rules. It's about. I mean, I think that's
too much thinking.
It's a good game. It's a two player game.
It's not Boggle Aaron.
Yeah, but if you step out, two player already limits it.
Well, true.
You
know? I agree.
But If Wishes Were Fishes, it's a good game to really get. You know, especially if it's a group.
Yeah,
it's a good game to really get people.
What is it? Guns and. Was that
Cash and Guns?
Cash and Guns.
That just came out in 2005.
Ah, okay,
we just played a lot
again.
Later.
Late adopter.
I got to say, the thing that really that I keep playing the most this year, hands down, is still Arkham Horror with the Dunwich expansion.
Man,
that I game know is hard two to different play for people, me. Two different groups of people who play the game ritualistically.
Yeah,
you know, I was invited to a Halloween party this year where they had all the expansions. They decorated this people's house in the middle of nowhere in a Cthulhu theme, had Cthulhu snacks, and invited everyone to come like in 1920s garb, which no one did.
Now let me
say, it's too long for.
It's not a casual gamer's game.
I gotta say, I don't know if that says that this is such a great game, or if that says that we should be scared about the people you hang out with. I mean, I'm just not sure. No, it is a great game.
Scared.
All right,
I gotta say, you know, it's got the most cult momentum of any board game I've ever seen.
Well, actually, you know, I bought a Christmas. We decided not to give each other Christmas presents. I actually have a Christmas present for you. I'm going to have to give it to you for your birthday. And I think it's going to fall maybe in the same category. I'm not sure.
I actually have presents for all of you that Matt's got sent back.
But the puppy won't survive that long.
Well, I hope the air holes are still okay. I was going to bring them all today, and then I went for Matt's, and it got sent back to the manufacturer, so I have to wait for it to arrive again.
Whatever, Don.
All right, so should we move on to the second topic?
Let's do it.
Why not?
Cue the second topic.
So this is going to be sort of a fly-by-the-seat-of-our-pants sort of topic. What we wanted to talk about was how do you create a supporting cast for your role-playing game or literary work, too. I mean, the rules should be somewhat similar. How do you create a believable cast that doesn't distract attention from your lead characters?
Whip Shanks.
And
Muffs.
You know, we've learned this through our mistakes, as perhaps some of you may have noticed.
My God.
So, I mean, what makes a good supporting cast to you?
Well, first of all, hopefully you have a... Well, I guess this is debatable even. Hopefully you have somewhat of a storyline that your characters are going to move through. And you... And, you know, these non-player characters...
Which brings us back to rule number one, real quick, which is remember the game is about your characters, your players.
Right. And this is a big problem with developing non-player characters for certain people because I think a lot of game masters want to play characters. And so they create these non-player characters that are sometimes overshadow the players.
The masturbatory character.
Yeah, and yeah. It's
I don't
really,
know what you're talking about.
It hurts the game. It really hurts,
yeah.
hurts the game. Now, I think maybe it could be used as a device as a starting campaign where you have... someone who overshadows the characters briefly, and you mm-hmm. think it's going to be one of these characters, and yet maybe it's the foil or someone gets killed, and then it might heighten, you know, because players can react. Oh, yeah. God, here's one of those characters. Oh, wait, he's dead now.
Or alternately, if you're playing a long-term game along the same idea, mm-hmm. You can have that character because a starting-level character is relatively incompetent. Mm-hmm. They're starting off. They're new. They're wet behind the ears. But they grow, and mm-hmm. they should grow relatively quickly in comparison to the world around them. So if you have that one overshadowing character, keep them fixed. As the characters grow in power and experience, let them surpass and eclipse that person who was once their mentor.
Overpowering meaning overpowering to the play of the game, not overpowering. You know, villains and non-player characters that are more powerful than player characters, I encourage greatly.
Right, but
crank that shit up.
Allies that are more powerful than your characters. Like, what's the character from Lord of the Rings, Tom Bombadil, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody always kind of looks at that series going, like, why didn't he just do all of it?
Well, he could have. He holds the ring, and he's like, hey, yeah, I could just...
I'm just super cool. I'm better than all of you.
I could have gotten rid of this ring, and that's why they...
I thought that was a fault to the storyline.
It is. It's a major fault.
Yeah.
You know?
It's his first book.
So don't forget, when you are creating your campaign, your characters don't need a Tom Bombadil. You know? So
maybe they do. And a dragon can be on the top floor of a building.
Here's one thing.
I forgot about that. Oh, Matt.
Here's one thing I want to throw out as a device for a non-player character. Mm-hmm. And I did this to you guys, but it's been so long you probably don't remember. One thing I like to create is a personal foil for... It doesn't even have to be the main character, but a personal foil for the characters or each character. Mm-hmm. Somebody that does something to the character right off the bat and then doesn't get retribution for. And so for the rest of your campaign or for a couple of campaigns, you're like, if he shows up, you go, that player goes, I'm going for him.
Yep. Dreams of vengeance.
You guys, yeah. If he hears about something that non-player character has done, he's like, I got to go out. It gets the emotion of the player going because they made fun of his player character at the beginning.
But this is also a dangerous one. This is also a dangerous one because most people want to play passionate characters that are going to chase down that guy even if there's no way in hell. Like, okay, I see Odin. Odin killed my parents. I'm going for him. But he's Odin. He's going to crush you. Mm-hmm. So you need to figure out as a game master ways to present that opportunity and ways to take it back. Right.
Well, true, because you also don't want them to get to them.
Exactly.
Because, A, they might kill them or, you know, do mm-hmm. something to them, and you want to tease them. Or you constantly – there are a lot of players who assume that the game master is not going to hurt them.
Yes.
Because, in general, the game master wants the game to move along, and they do want the characters to survive. And so players play – oh, a horde of 50 orcs come over the hill. I draw my sword. And you're thinking, you should be running.
Yeah.
This is to get you to run. But they assume the game master. And so they run in and try to fight Odin. That's the problem.
One way around that, I don't suggest it always. It depends on your group. Know your players. This is good advice for
every
situation.
Kill off one of the players.
Drop the first player does it. Drop him dead. You know, if he wants to run headlong into that group of orcs, drop his ass with an arrow, and you will see everybody else, oh, it's not that type of game. People will reassess, rethink their characters, and start playing more realistically.
You should know your players before doing that.
Oh, absolutely. That does not work for every group. No. Like, some players can't handle that.
You know? I would say that your additional characters to your story, they're the spice, they're not the meat of your story. Okay? Which means, you know, as a rule, you don't want to have one of these characters be with your characters at all time. You know,
I agree.
You don't want to design a campaign where you've got a character, that's you know, being role played by the GM the whole time. Otherwise, you know, it's just an additional character that's playing with you, and that's a mistake. So if you have a campaign where you have a character that should be somewhat like that is powerful, that's over, you know, too powerful or top heavy per se, you want to find ways to drag your character away. You want to find things that happen that suddenly your character's not where they expect to be. Mm-hmm. You know, we're traveling with this person and we're going to be traveling for a long time. We just got kidnapped.
Or it doesn't even have to get that far.
Yeah.
If you're dealing with incredibly powerful characters, right?
Yeah.
It's the old Spider-Man adage, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go up to your Duke and you can ask the Duke for troops to go clear out your dungeon for you.
Yeah.
But that Duke has responsibilities to that city.
Yeah.
That Duke is not going to be running all over the countryside and he ain't going to be loaning you soldiers if he has to worry about the Duke next door.
Yeah.
You know? So remember, as you present your characters opportunities to interact with royalty, with nobility, with great wizards, with great fairy queens, whatever, you know, space alien conquistador warlords.
Wow.
Remember, your characters are going to want to take these people for everything they're worth. But every resource that these people give up to your characters is a resource that they would be spending on bettering their own agenda, bettering their own people's position. Unless the characters have something very legitimate to offer to whatever group that person represents, they're not going to get anything from that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Information is only worth so much. You know, deeds of great valor in the past is wonderful, but what have you done for me lately? You know, these people have a lot to maintain, so don't avoid letting your people interact with kings and queens. They want to meet the great people because these are people they hope to be one day.
All right, so here's a question. One of the things I've loved to do, but which I've only done successfully once, is having the player characters be a small part of the greater storyline,
mm-hmm.
of being, you know, one major battle within a huge war, or even less than that, one tiny mission to, you know, get rid of the shield so that, you know, everybody else can blow up the Death Star.
Or the Forrest Gumps of the...
Yeah, exactly.
But to what effect? Like,
what I'm asking is how do you keep that other huge storyline, all of those NPCs, that entire world of what news is going on from here and there and everywhere, while maintaining your
well. I'm wondering though why.
Here's the danger. I'm sorry. Go.
For example, if you want to play a World War II game.
Mm-hmm.
Was that what you, like, in a good example?
Yes, that's the only time it's ever worked for me was I went in and I tracked World War II.
Yeah.
And I had my characters doing these individual events while World War II was
happening. Well, I think the key...
Just
quickly, I think maybe partially the key is to limit that. Because it's not about... I mean, if it really is about, man, we have to get into this farmhouse... The rest of the universe doesn't exist for us. And maybe that is more important than knowing that they're the big, you know, a small part of a big cog. Unless there's a storyline that the end game is that they're so important that they aren't a small bit, that they're the key to this large thing. I don't know.
I would say that it can only work in a historical setting where we know the broader story. Otherwise... You know, I mean, it becomes fun to see how your story weaves into the story of World War II.
Right.
But you could do Lord of the Rings.
Well, or Lord of the Rings, where we know the story. But it becomes less fun to play a bit character in a a vast universe where this big overarching story is happening, if you have to spend so much time telling us what's happening that we don't get time to play.
Right.
Which
is
the problem.
That's where it's failed for me.
Exactly. Which is why I'm telling you that it works where we know the story, but where you have to stop and tell us.
It failed for me three times. The fourth time it worked really, really well.
Rule number one, mm-hmm. remember the story is always about your characters. Mm-hmm. Right? Even if it's the backdrop is World War II. Right?
That's just flavor.
That's flavor. If you are telling them a story where you're like, well, you're going into this farmhouse, but in the grand scheme of things, what you're doing doesn't matter, which was the impression I got from when you were relating that, why would they care when you start telling them about what's happening in Paris? If they're not invested in the story...
No, it's not that. It's basically if you're... They had the storm, the beach at Normandy equivalent of, you know, but they still felt like a tiny little cog in the midst of this gigantic...
Bringing it back to non-player characters...
It's investment. Is, you know, if they don't... You need to find... One, make sure that they're interested in the big story you want to tell. My suggestion, something that's worked for me in the past, is multiple characters.
Right.
Where they play multiple... stories, multiple characters that deal with multiple little portions. So when you start telling them about this thing that happened in Paris, we were there. I'm listening for my character's involvement. I want to know what I did. You know, what happened to my people I dealt with.
Right.
As opposed to amorphous figures that...
I've never played character-changing
The only time
campaigns.
It ever worked for me was... when the people became so invested in their platoon, and it was like the guys of their platoon became, you know, even though they were tiny little cogs in the wheel, and they were changing things, and eventually ended up changing, you know, we're in the biggest battle ever. It was when they became so invested in, oh my God, Jones just died? Oh, crap.
But that's about
that's about their personal world and their personal experience, not about the big picture.
Right.
So bringing back to non-player characters, I mean, the flavor that you need to introduce into those type of things, it could be, you know, watching a war-torn general and his five remaining troops stumble upon your camp, and he doesn't even have to tell you the freaking story. You just know that he used to have 1,000 troops, and now he's passing by, and that's all the story you need. These are great examples, I think, of non-player characters that can stumble in and out of scenes that tell a story without having to hear the bullshit of, you know, him telling you about the battle. You just see a man that you maybe saw, you know, four plays ago, you used to have this giant army, and now you see him tied to a horse riding by, or maybe he's stumbling in and, you know, dies in front of you. I mean, that tells more of a story of, man, there's a big battle over the hill that we weren't even there. And you have a non-player character essentially tell you that.
Yeah, I would say, I would rephrase what you just said, which is make it visual, make it visceral, make it something you see as much as possible, make it something you experience, even if it's, you know, even if it's you experience it from the very edges of it, you know, like you're in a battle or something. To make it less, more that, and less, there was a, you know, someone telling you, there was a big
The rumor at the inn and the bars only go so far.
Well, that's one of the things that really intrigues me in terms of storytelling in general, is the tiny little story that you never hear about in the midst of something gigantic, you know. In the midst of World War II, you know, the housewife who managed to hole up in her attic while Nazis were, you know, inside of her village. You know, that's an incredibly interesting story to me. And telling that one always seems very hard to me.
Non-player bad guys. Any suggestions? NPC villains. These are particularly tricky because... they need to inspire the players.
Don's really good at it. When I played your game, I was really, really intrigued with your bad guys more than just about anybody other than my friend Dave, who made me hate his villains more than anything.
My advice to game masters would be to know your strengths. Right? If you are a kind of a large, fiery, intimidating person, use your physicality to throw your presence in people's faces. If that's not you, shy away from that, because you're not going to be able to present the character you're trying to. for me, I tend to be a more icy person, so my villains tend to be more kind of calm, composed, and laser-focused. playing more on dancing on words. For me, that's because I find that more intimidating to a lot of the players I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
That's my big advice. If your big villain needs to be able to match what you can present, but okay. here's the big advice, and it's not just for villains; it's for all of your supporting cast. For me, nothing is more disappointing than a game master who says the villain looks at you disparagingly and says that he thinks you don't have the guts to back up what you just said. Do you understand that?
So you want more of the role play.
I want somebody to be able to look me in the eye, to sneer at me, and say, you don't have the guts. That's everything about role playing, mm-hmm. right? Put me in the world just for that second. Give me what you can.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a game master, you need to be willing to sacrifice your dignity. You need to be willing to take a chance that people may think you look silly.
And you need to know your character you're portraying, because you're going to have to react to what they're going to say to you next. And it needs to be legit.
Freakin'-lutely.
It needs to be legit.
Know your motives.
Is there a different way for people who don't feel that they're as good at acting it out?
Yeah, see, I'm kind of a third-person role player. My character draws a sword. I do that a lot.
Uh-huh.
You and Morgan are very first-person role-playing.
That's how we both got into it.
You guys threw me off the first time.
Oh, it was hilarious.
I thought you guys were talking. I was like, what are you guys talking about? We're role-playing with each other. I'm like, oh, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, we found out afterwards that people thought we were having a fight. And that's what, like, because we were our characters were in a fight, and Matt and Mindy actually pulled us apart.
Yeah,
you know, and we're like, what's going on?
Weirded me out. I've always been.
Yeah. So if you can't pull that off, do you have any suggestions?
If you can't pull that off, it's
because there's going to be romantic characters, and that would get more awkward.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my suggestion. I've done this. I've done this, and trust me, I am a 6'4". Very heavy Polynesian man. Most guys are not really into doing romantic scenes with me. Just saying. Okay, here's one way. Voice modulation, softening the voice, but don't try and be girlish. Don't try and be a woman. Just soften the voice and remain realistic.
Bras. Right?
I find needle points coming
needle
out of
point
the
front. Bras.
Listen to books on tape. Listen to any book on tape where people have to do girls as well. And you'll see how they handle it. And most of the time, they don't go too much into it. They just soften their voice a little bit, just like you just said.
Yeah.
And that's all you need. It just paints enough of a picture.
Okay.
And it's better than, like, overacting it.
I suggest stepping away from physically inhabiting a female character if she's supposed to be a love interest.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just heightening the feeling that, all right, Dawn is mashing on me, and I'm really not comfortable with this. So what I tend to do is soften the voice and avert eyes. Actually, that's the one time I won't try and maintain a lot of eye contact with a player. Mm. Because if I don't maintain eye contact, then they can just kind of sink themselves into the scene. They can look away. They don't have to live it with me.
Right.
They can sink into the scene and imagine
it more. They don't have to be romantic with you, Dawn.
Peter, don't look at me like
that.
Especially if you don't have your tooth in.
You're looking mighty fine tonight, Dawn.
Without the tooth and the Ghostbuster Slimer
Some
shirt.
People out there may think this is cowardly, but don't. I mean, just think of it as role play to the point that you're comfortable, and role play to the point your player is comfortable.
And then throw magic missile.
Ba-dum-tsh, if you know what I mean, the old magic missile.
So that said, accents are great. But know what accents you have that are good.
Yeah, don't do the German accent for everything. Like, was that one game that we played, the spy game, and we just decided
everybody was German, yeah.
Yeah, I think it just became a running joke that worked, but we decided that whether you're from Greece, from England, we were all going to do German accents.
All right, so here's...
Comic relief characters are key.
Here's cure
Use your bad accents on your comic characters.
Here's cure my problem, GM Don. I get addicted to individual... As an actor, I get addicted to individual characters. And it's hard as a GM to get out of them because, I'll find this one character and, he's so much fun to be as an actor, this one mm-hmm. character. And it's hard for me to slip in between each of them and keep the improv going and hold the world together. So how do I do that? How do I slip easier?
Okay, how you slip out of the character?
Slip in and out of individual characters and hold them together.
One, cling to rule number one. The story is about the players.
Okay.
If you find yourself injecting that character into scenes constantly, if the characters aren't seeking them out, but they're always there,
you want to
be a player. Have a problem. You know,
you would rather be a player than
yeah. Figure out what it is about the character that you enjoy, right? And if it's like, you know, a certain wit, right? Then maybe what you can do is incorporate that, like in a fantasy campaign, incorporate that wit into halflings. That's a halfling trait. So every time they encounter a halfling, they have that kind of dry, you know, fun, off-the-cuff kind of thing. So it's not the same character, but, you know, their attitude, their patter is sort of a racial or a background or an ethnic trait, right? Same thing with elves, if you like being the calm, cool, collected, ice-focused type person. You know, incorporate that into nobility, you know, that's a trait that the nobles have, so the merchant classes try and emulate it. So you find people that are trying to pretend that they're of a station that they're not have that same personality that they're presenting to the world.
Or build campaigns that have limited focus of characters so that you can concentrate on your...
One at a time.
Your,
I might have to do that.
Like, we just started a game recently where I put you all in the woods. Mm-hmm. For me, that was a conscious choice to try and get away from my area of comfort. I'm putting you in an area where you have limited resources. Interaction is minimal with outside people. I want to try and do something a little different. In that sort of situation, you get to focus a lot more on the characters that are actually there, right? Which means know your motives. Know the motives of your supporting cast, all right? One thing that's a common tactic that a lot of game masters make is to plant a character in the party, whether or not it's Whipshanks, that's just because they like that there, or for whatever reason, that character becomes a channel for information to the party, right? That's important, but it is really tempting for a lot of game masters to make them too dominant, you know?
Always happens to me.
Make them a servant, right? Make the familiar of your magic user that character, right? Not only does that make, you know, that character more limited in the ways they can apply, it makes the expectations of the party on them a little less. You know, if the valet is the guy that comes up with all this information, they don't really expect him to pick up this Fyhander and go one-on-one with a dragon.
Damn it.
Right? And
valet.
If it's actually like that character's valet or that character's familiar, right, that makes that character, it gives kudos to that character. You're enriching their background. You're building on their persona and feeds into rule number one. The game is about your players.
Yeah. Right? True that. Anything else?
Oh, I want to add that I think it's really important. You want to bring the game to life for your characters. So, which means you want to bring these sort of non-player characters to life. And literally. So what I find really helps is you go out, you get a battle axe. You hire a barbarian-looking person. You tell the party that the barbarians are attacking, and then you have someone kick the door down.
Peter comes from the air.
I can't imagine
screaming,
why your wife does
more blood for Odin!
Yeah.
And, it gets him right into the game.
Peter comes from the Eric von Stroheim school of game mastering.
Actually, there's a couple of games, role-playing games, came out in the 80s. I'm not sure if there are any out now that suggested on having a co-game master. And the co-game master played non-player
Works
characters.
Works very well.
So you'd have the game master would tell the story part and the action and run the game. And when a non-player character came up, he gave it to this secondary player who then was acting out all those scenes. And so they even had to react to the game master as well. So
that's a lot of fun.
A similar tactic, when you have one character that likes to break off from the party a lot, which is always a pain in the ass, right? One thing that you can often do is allow other players to inhabit NPCs on their side quests, right? And you'd be amazed how much fun it can be for players who want to be something different for a little while. So, like, the three cranky old guys who are drinking, right, always seems to crop up in role-playing games when you let people do this.
Right.
You know, because it's going to be three people that are just heckling that random guy that wanders off, and it becomes the most fun side comic adventure you can imagine. It's wonderful.
I love that idea.
It's wonderful.
It's so much fun to fuck with your friends. It's like...
Absolutely. But also, you know, again, breaking out of the idea that the game master has to supply all of the story and that the character has have no the players have no responsibility, this gives more responsibility to the players. You meet a ranger on the road. He looks drunk, Don.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Speaking of halfling, you're just short. Are you a halfling?
See, I mean, it takes the pressure off the game master, but also adds the game master has to react, which makes it more fun for the game master too.
It's wonderful.
You know, good idea.
Yeah, it reinvigorates everyone involved.
I've just realized that I want to play a midget human in a world of halflings who constantly gets mistaken for
halflings. I've done that. It's fun. I was masquerading as a halfling. No one knew.
That's a lot of fun.
One other tip for people like me who are, what do you call it, accent impaired.
See, I'm not accent impaired. I'm just game mastering impaired.
Well, be a player.
I enjoy being
a player. I don't enjoy playing because I'm a third person. Like, I never see myself as my character. Right. And I think that's
why you have problems thinking of names for your character.
Yeah.
Well, here's a tip for me. This is something that actually does work for me. I've never had anyone comment that it made the game better for them, but it made me more comfortable, right? When you're making up...
Loincloth.
When you're dealing with races, like elves or aliens, very often what people will do is like, okay, all elves have a French accent. Go, you know? That's kind of dull, right? Mm-hmm. Make up an accent that nobody can quite place, right? Then you don't have to worry about it, you know? I have done entire games with the accent that is unplaceable, but extending consonants or vowel sounds in strange, unusual ways.
It's like Meryl Streep in Out of Africa.
Exactly. You know, nobody knows what the fuck it is, but if you keep your own rhythm with it, eventually people just pick up on it, and they begin to recognize that. You know, and eventually I've had people step in and like, oh, I want to play an elf. What the fuck is that accent? How do I do that? I can do that. All right. And they started doing that accent I made up, you know.
Interesting.
There's no rules to the accent, you know, so God only knows if they're doing it right. But
I think it's better that way. I'm listening to the Belgariad right now.
Oh, really?
And they're giving everyone different accents, French accents and all sorts of stuff. It's a little cool, but it's a little annoying at the same time. I'd much rather have what you're talking about. Like, just individual new accents.
And quite frankly, if you can't pull it off, go straight. Just play it straight.
Play it straight.
It'll just be distracting. Just let it go. Because there's nothing worse than having it derail your great idea because you're trying and everyone's going, it's not working.
And here's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a big one. When it comes to NPCs, less is more. The more NPCs you jam into a scene, the more likely you're going to end up talking to yourself for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And nobody wants that.
No.
You know?
The other thing, you kind of said this before, but I found, you know, I taught briefly, and what I found that really helped me was I went in there, and one of the first things I did is I did something really big and really obnoxious and just totally embarrassed myself on purpose. And so that after that, I was so comfortable going. I had set a range. And I was comfortable, you know, going anywhere below that range after that because I'd already made a fool of myself. You know, it was so much easier to just kind of talk to everybody and teach and be myself and be comfortable. And you can do the same thing.
On purpose.
So jump into the big deep end and get into a character and stare somebody down and threaten them.
The first moment, if you're nervous about about playing something, do it big right off the bat, and then you'll find that you're a little more comfortable doing it.
And here's a big one, not just for character for NPCs, but just to play with. Don't be afraid to experiment. You know. Try conventions you've seen in movies. Try conventions you've seen in TV. The first time somebody did a quick cut with me, right, was like, the orc is bearing down on you. You are tied down to the table. He raises his cleaver, and Matt, you look to your left. You see a happy little fawn as you wander through the woods.
Right.
First time someone did that to me, I was like, what the fuck? What did you... Ooh, that's cool. You know?
Actually, I tried that my last game that I played with you guys.
I loved that. I thought it was great.
Jumped back in time.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of a big battle, right. And right before you guys were all about ready to get trounced, we jumped back 2 weeks.
Never finished that.
And now maybe we'll crank that back up.
Or in the latest game I started running you guys through, right? I thought this was interesting. Didn't entirely work, but I thought it was going to be fun. You guys made up your character backgrounds, and then I didn't tell you where you were. And I just started off with Peter running through the trees knowing something was behind
him. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, too. I liked being dropped in that way.
Best one ever got done to me was we were playing the Amber game. Mm-hmm. And in Amber, you can use these cards, trumps, to make calls to people. You touch their image, and basically you can contact them telepathically across realities. And so...
Well, can't you do anything in that game?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're gods. You're gods. Yeah. But the way this guy... The guy that managed it was wonderful. So this one guy goes, you know, I want to contact Matt. And I said, oh, okay, I pick up. And he goes, no, you don't have the call. And I went, okay. And he proceeded to run my adventure. And I was out at sea and on a ship, and eventually there's a storm came, and I'm up at the top of a mast, and there's a gale, and I'm trying to get the sail in, and I'm about to fall into the ocean because they're 25-foot waves. And he goes, you get a trump call. And I had completely forgotten about it at that point in time, and I was like, not now! And that was great.
That's a great intro. That's
playing
wonderful.
With the time difference of other things.
I love that. That's great. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Is that everything we have to say about this topic?
Forgive us if we kind of run off the mouth on the role-playing topics.
We always run to the mouth.
Yeah, but we don't do that many of them, so I get a little over-enthusiastic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, always want to talk about it. So.
Yeah.
We'll have plenty more. I like these kind of gaming tips. I want to do things about, like, you know... What do you do in Ice World?
You know what we should
do? What do you do on...
Strategy games. We should pick strategy games, a bunch of them that have similar aspects, like the worker placement games, stuff like that. How do you win those? How do you, you know, what do you do that helps you?
That would be interesting, because I've noticed on at least two different games that we played were strategy games. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I automatically took opposite strategies on how to win.
Yeah.
Well, he did
I
that.
Remember that.
Did you win twice on Railroad?
Like the Railroad Tycoon, yeah.
We all went, Matt, you're losing.
Yeah,
you're
and I went big.
You just bum-rushed
that road. Yeah, I bum-rushed it and won, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't fight the Asian man on the railroad.
On the railroads. Yeah.
You're
you mean the
Irish?
Asian guy won in a railroad building game? Gee, shocking.
Don't mess with the Asian guy in a railroad building.
Well, folks, we have no bit this week.
No bit this week.
Never get into a land war in Asia.
But it is an hour and a half, so for God's sake.
Excellent.
We've got some mail.
I got a couple of links before we go.
Excellent.
New, actually wonderful video game role-playing game website called rockpapershotgun.com.
Hmm.
Fantastic site, and they've been doing PC gaming since 1873. That's just it. And also Jawbone, the headset that I got. I'll put that link as well, because they're fantastic.
Nice. Anything else?
Nope.
Before we close this biatch down?
I think that's it.
Yep, that's it.
So, again, with a new year, send your ideas for new episodes, thoughts on the show, personal insults towards any of us that you wish.
Don.
To geeksan.com or...
Yeah, apparently I'm the emotional one.
You are the emotional one.
You're the passionate one.
How dare you?
You have passion.
That's bull crap.
Yes, definitely email us. I mean, we don't get paid, but we love our egos stroked a little bit.
Yes.
So send us a
my
thing.
Ego, baby.
It gets us going. You know, sometimes it's hard to put out an episode, but when we get emails saying that you like our show or you have suggestions,
yep.
Or even if you have if you criticize us, we like actually talking about those emails too. So
criticisms are fantastic.
Matt, yep. Peter, Don, or Aaron at geeksan.com.
I'd like to make some adjustments to this coming up year Geeks On. If we should talk about maybe some additional stuff that might.
We need to do a Technobabble soon, too.
I would love
to do another Dear Demon Lord. We're so far behind on those.
Oh, so many times.
It's been like 3 years since we've done a Dear Demon Lord.
All right, everybody. Have a good Geek Week.
Rock it.
Bye.
Geek it out.